You know, as I heard the testimonies tonight, we could easily say with the one about the hearing aids, well, and even the one for the schooling, well, how could that be? And then all of a sudden you say, wait a minute, that sounds just like how God operates. How many times in the Bible did it happen just like that? Man couldn't figure out how to do it. I was thinking, even as I heard that, I was thinking about Elijah. When he went to the woman and said, I need a drink of water. While you're doing it, would you make me a cake? She said, I tell you what, I've got just enough for me and my son. Without God, you say, oh, that's the end of it. Folks, when you factor in God, everything opens up. Too often, we get to be earthbound, where I've got to figure it out. And the Lord tells me, my ways are not like your ways. As the heavens are higher than the earth, that's how much higher my ways are than yours. God is well able to take care of us in temporal things. He's got a desire to take care of us in spiritual things. Each one of us are headed for eternity. You know, it's so easy to forget that. Just living day by day, I have plans for tomorrow. I have plans for next week. And yet, when I come here just a few years ago, there were several other people that were here. The Goodwines. Both of them gone now. We each have an appointment. And it makes me think of the seriousness of a meeting. It's not just that we say, well, you know, each spring and each fall, we ought to get together. But it's a time for us to say, Lord, we're going to set aside a special time here. We want you to visit us. We're asking you to help us to balance out time and eternity. Because as I live just in this life, I'm not going to see the balance. So we need help from the Lord. I've been thinking about the word perspective. It's got a little simple definition. It's the way a person sees something. You know what? I have my perspective on things. You have yours. A meeting like this, what we're begging the Lord is that we would be able to see His. Lord, what is your perspective on a lot of different issues? Something that will help me to be able to seek His perspective, how He sees things. I was thinking about Hezekiah when he was sick unto death. And the prophet came to him, Isaiah came to him with a message from the Lord. He didn't just come to him and say, wow, you don't look too good today. You look like you're pretty sick. No, he said, I've got something from the Lord. Thus saith the Lord, set your house in order because you're going to die and not live. Do you realize each one of us tonight have that message sent personally to us? Set your house in order. You're going to die. Whether it's this year, 10 years from now, it's coming to every man. You know, that should change perspective. It should change how I see things. It should cause me to say, you know what, how I see it really doesn't matter. Because I understand one day I'm going to stand before the great God Almighty. I would really like for my perspective to start lining up with His while I'm down here. Dad, my father, before he died, for about 6 months before he died, he knew this is it. Unless the Lord does something, I'm gone with this one. There had been many times that he had gotten sick before, that he had been on hospice before. Hospice comes to you when they expect within a few months you will be gone. He would be on hospice, look like sure he's going to be gone soon. The Lord would touch him and they would have to put him off the program because he's doing too good. He went through that about 3 times. But on this last one, he knew this one is it's coming to me now. Does your perspective change? It should. I should be willing to throw aside everything of how I see it to make sure it lines up with how the Lord sees it. For the last few months, Dad had congestive heart failure. He could not lay in a bed because when he laid down, it felt like he was going to die. So he would, I would stay with him on the weekends. My sister would stay with him during the week. And at maybe 3 or 4 in the morning, I would hear his buggy click on. We're each one headed for eternity. Dad knew he was. I would hear him moving around in there, go to him and say, "Well, Dad, what's the matter? Are you uncomfortable?" He said, "No." He said, "I'm just making sure. I want to make sure everything is right between me and God. Don't want to take a chance. I do not want to take a chance that I would miss it." To each one of us today, we have a call. We're going to stand before the Lord. And I want to be ready. At that time, it's only going to be His righteousness that's going to matter. It tells us even now, our righteousnesses are as filthy rags. I want to be ready. And I was thinking about for this meeting, if each one of us would view this as a time that I have received the same call as Hezekiah did. Set your house in order. You're going to die and not live. Is there any adjustments that I would need to make? Any changes that I would need to make in my life? Any perspective changes that I've seen it? This is the way I see it. And I'd want to say, "Well, Lord, I ask you to check it out. Is this the way you see it?" Psalms 139 and 23 and 24 is a prayer that I think would be good for every one of us. As we view what Hezekiah was facing, set your house in order. It says, "Search me, O God." Psalms 139 and 23. "Know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts. See if there be any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting." Because it is not safe for me to want to be the one to search myself. There's a verse of a song that I'd like for you to sing with me. This helps me to get life back in perspective. "Eternity draws near as time moves on, when earth shall disappear, I shall have gone out in the great unknown to reap what I have sown. Summoned before the throne, then where shall I go? Where shall I go? Where shall I go? From the great judgment seat, where shall I go?" A lot of times when we hear that song, we will think about the general end of all things. And when we look at 2 Peter 3, it said there's going to be people that are going to say, where? There are going to be scoffers that say, "Where's the sign of His coming? Since our fathers fell asleep, things have just continued, and you're talking about the end of time." I would like for us to forget tonight about the end of all things and just remember, I have an appointment. How many people in the last 100 years, just you take the United States, there's hardly anybody that lives over 100 years. In 100 years, this earth, this world is almost completely cleared out. The end has come for all of those, and there's another generation. And yet, I'm like, could be like those scoffers. We've been hearing about the end of time ever since I was a little boy. I've been going to camp meetings and hearing it. It hadn't happened yet, and it can seem like it's something way off in the distance. Let's forget about the end of all things, and let's remember I have an appointment, and I'm marching closer to it. There's a danger for me when I search myself. There's a verse in Proverbs 21 and 2. It says, "Every way of a man is right in his own eyes, but the Lord ponders the heart." And I have to look over my past at things that I did, and I said, I did it because it was right. And then the Lord comes along and says, but I wasn't in it. Every way of a man, I wouldn't have done it if I didn't think it was right. Every way of a man is right in his own eyes, but I need the Lord to do the searching. If I lived as if this were my last year, what cautions would I get from the Lord to be very careful? What I want to talk to you tonight about is to the one that says, I want to make heaven my home. I have no desire to turn back to the world. The devil does not even tempt me in that area. My desire is to make heaven my home. I want to make it. So does the devil say, there's nothing I can do then. He's free and going to make it because he doesn't love the world. He's turned his back on the world. To the Christians, the devil has a plan for every one of us. He doesn't care if it's a 5-year plan, a 10-year plan, 20-year plan. He's only needing to work it to where he can finish up before we step out into eternity. Eternity draws near for me and you as time moves on. For me to be prepared for that day, I need to live this year as if this one will be my last. As if Isaiah came to me instead of Hezekiah and said, Dan, set your house in order. If you got anything you need to do, take care of it. I want to talk to you tonight about, for the Christian, the things that the devil has prepared for us is distractions. The definition for that is, it's the process of diverting the attention of an individual or a group from the desired area of focus, thereby diminishing the reception of the desired information or direction. The process of diverting the attention. The devil would love to send distractions to us. I was thinking about when I was a boy, about 13 years old, he took me out on the gravel road in the car, and he said, okay, you need to start practicing some driving. So out here where there's nobody around on the dirt road, I'm sitting over here in the passenger side, so now drive the car. I thought that was wonderful. I remember one time when I was driving, Dad sitting over there in the passenger seat, and we had brought my younger sister. She was just a toddler. She was sitting in the middle of the seat, and I don't guess we even had seat belts back in those days. We're riding down the dirt road, and somehow she leans forward, and she just kind of topples over. She rolls over in the floor in between us. And so Dad, he leans over, he reaches to get her, and he's working with her, getting her up. I don't know what I was thinking, because I did the same thing. I just let go of the steering wheel. I bent down there with him. Well, he's got his head down under the dash anyhow, so he doesn't see what I'm doing. I'm bent over with him, helping pick her up, and then I hear this sound. We're going down the road rubbing the barbed wire fence. We're running along in the barbed wire fence, scratching his good car all up. And then I raise up to hear, see what the scratching noise is, and I see ahead of us, there's a dead tree, just a stump of a tree. And we hit that, and it falls over on the car. I thought, this is the end of my driving. I will never get to drive again. Distractions. I was distraction. I got my mind off on something else. You know what? In America today, there is an epidemic of distractions. And America is trying to figure out what we're going to do about it. We turned it loose, and now we don't know how to stop it. And it's the cell phone. You know, it wasn't that many years ago. If you took a trip, nobody knew where you were till you got to the other. We can't even hardly imagine that existed. And you know, really, that wasn't that many years ago. And now the cell phone came along, and at first, a lot of us said, you know what, I don't even need that. There was a pager that came first whenever I was at work. And I thought, that's really something. They can catch me, and now I got to go find a phone and hope I got a quarter to be able to call back to work to do the work that needs to be done. And time progressed to the point that now cell phones are so available. And now it is the texting that is done while I'm driving down the road, thinking I'll be able to keep my focus and I won't be distracted. And they're saying, how many accidents are coming? Now, I can't text hardly even when I'm sitting still. I'm the one that just has to hunt it. I got to find it and punch the little letter. But just to try to call a phone number, you're going to go at 65 mile an hour. You're going to go a long ways trying to dial a phone number. Distractions. And now in Oklahoma, they're trying to pass some laws that if the police should pass you and see you texting, it's an immediate fine. It doesn't matter. And I understand it, because distractions are on us. But I don't really want to talk about the temporal distractions tonight. Are there any spiritual distractions for us? Do you remember any distractions? It looks like the disciples, when they walked with the Lord, there would be nothing that would be a distraction to them. Was it that way? I'd like for us to look at a verse in Mark 9 and 33. It says, Jesus came to Capernaum, and being in the house, he asked them, what was it that ye disputed among yourselves by the way? But they held their peace. For by the way, they had disputed among themselves. Is this a distraction? Who should be the greatest? They were busy looking at, while he's out helping people, they're interested in which one of us is going to be the greatest when this thing really fires off good. And so Jesus starts working with them. 35th verse, he says, if any man desire to be the first, the same shall be last of all and servant of all. And Jesus, by example, taught us about this one. Second of the verse in Philippians 2 and 5, let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. It says he took upon himself the form of a servant, made himself of no reputation, and he taught his disciples, those of you that would be great, let him be the servant of all. Jesus could have said, do as I say and not as I do. But instead, he taught us by example. He took upon himself the form of a servant. And he said, the Son of Man did not come to be ministered to, but to minister to others and give his life for many. There was another distraction in the Bible. It said there was a certain king that he took account of his servants. And he came upon one that owed him 10,000 talents. When he did not have the means, he told him to pay up. When he did not have the means to pay up, it's going to go to prison. Now, how are you ever going to pay when you're sitting in prison? And the servant did what I would have done. He begged him, Lord, if you'll give me some time, I'll try to pay you back. I would like for us to look at this. This is in Matthew in the 18th and the 27th verse. Because there are some distractions that we see in the Bible. And if we're not careful, we can have that same problem. In 18 and 27, 26, the servant therefore fell down and worshipped him, saying, Lord, have patience with me, and I'll pay thee all. Then the Lord of that servant was moved with compassion, loosed him, and forgave the debt. Have you had a debt that you couldn't pay? And the Lord comes along, and he forgives it. I could have never paid the price that it would have taken. Looks like that servant would have left there so happy, he had never seen anybody that owed him money. But it says that same servant, he went out and he found one of his fellow servants, which owed him just a very little. And he laid hands on him and took him by the throat, saying, pay me that thou owest. He got distracted. Should have had on his mind for a long time, the king has forgiven me such a great debt. I am so willing to forgive others. We have been forgiven. I have been forgiven a great debt. And how easy as it is for me to see someone that owes me something, a wrong that has been done to me. If I'm not careful, I'll grab him by the throat and I forget that I was just forgiven. there's another distraction I would like to talk to you about tonight. You remember when Jesus was talking to Peter? It's at the very last chapter of the book of John. And he was asking three times, Peter, do you love me more than these? And Peter said, yes, Lord, I do love you. And then right at the last of the book, Jesus turns to Peter and he gives him a special call. And it says in the 19th verse, Jesus saith unto him, follow me. Directly to Peter. Straight to Peter. Peter hears what, there's no question about it. This is not to the 12. This is something straight to Peter. Peter, follow me. And what did Peter do? Peter, seeing him, saith to Jesus in the 21st verse, he saw John, and he gets to wondering. Now, wait a minute. Before I follow you, I got a question. And his question was, Lord, what shall this man do? This distraction has gotten me in the past. Maybe not so much by looking around at others, Lord, what is this person going to do? But Lord, take a look at what this person is doing. When all the Lord asked was, Dan, won't you follow me? He didn't ask me to take care of everybody else around me. At home, we have a couple dogs, and I've got a half-mile driveway. In the morning when I leave for work, both of them love to run that driveway all the way to the road. And it's like they're racing each other to see which one will win. I've got one of them, he would win every time. He's the fastest of the two. But he's got a problem. He can't see what the other dog is doing behind him and how close he is. So he's going to win. If he could run without stopping, he's going to win. But about halfway, he hadn't seen that other dog at all. And he don't even know how far back he is or if he's right on him. So he stops. And he turns around. And I've seen more than once that at that time, it's almost like that other dog has figured it out. I can never beat him except this one time. When he spins around, I'm going to be close enough that I run right on by him and he can't speed up. It reminds me of what we're talking about tonight. If I would focus only on myself and the Lord's call to me to follow him, I would have no distractions. But it's so easy to look around and say, but what is this one doing right here? There is a song that has been sung in the past. It says, it's not my brother, it's not my sister, but it's me, O Lord, standing in the need of prayer. As I start thinking like Hezekiah thought, I've just got the message. Set your house in order. You're going to die. You're not going to live. My perspective would probably start adjusting on some of these things. Well, we may not get the call that Hezekiah got. Majority of the people don't. Hezekiah got a special call. Set your house in order. There are so many people that breathe one breath and the next one does not come. And out into eternity there go. It's easy for me to focus my attention on world conditions. On the conditions of America, on the conditions of the church world, on my brother's conditions. And I fail to do just what Jesus asked Peter to do. Peter, just follow me. And I'm distracted. And eternity's coming. 2 Peter 3, where the warning is for us. It's not his will that any would perish. That's the reason he's holding it off as long as he is. Not willing that any would perish, but that everybody would be able to come to repentance. And then in the 11th verse it says, since we see that all this is going to be dissolved, what manner of persons ought ye to be? It doesn't say ought the whole church to be. It's almost like he just brought it right on down just like Jesus did. I'm dealing with one person now. It's me. What manner of person ought ye to be? And in the 14th verse it says, be diligent that ye be found in him without spot and blameless. A few years ago, I was praying to the Lord. I said, Lord, I wish you would give me a view of eternity. Because you know what? We'll just have to take it by faith. What we read in the Bible, we're just going to have to believe it. The closest that we get to it in the Bible is reading about the rich man and Lazarus. And other than that, there's not a whole lot. We're just going to have to believe there's a heaven and a hell. And eternity is coming. And so I was praying, Lord, would you please help me? Would you send something? He doesn't have to do it. But one night I had a dream. And in that dream, it's just as clear as me standing before you today. I could take you today where it was in the dream that I was standing in Guthrie. It was out behind somebody's house, and I was looking kind of up a hill. And there was buildings up there. And we kind of have in our mind what we would expect the end to come on us like. It says there's going to be a great sound of trumpets. Well, I heard we're having trouble now in Oklahoma with earthquakes. And earthquakes will be like thunder. It rolls right past you. The house shakes and rumbles, and then it rolls off in the distance like thunder would roll. This was, as I was in my dream standing behind this house, I heard that kind of noise, to where immediately that kind of noise sends you to think, this could be it. And as I was looking up there at a building, I saw it just start moving. Things that would not normally happen, I saw it just start moving and then roll over. And I thought, this isn't normal here. And all around me, out of the ground, just were little spouts of smoke start coming up. And immediately in my mind, it was, this is it. The end has come. In my life, I've had a lot of problem of spending my time looking at others. But I noticed something that day in that dream. Immediately when I saw the smoke, there were people everywhere around me. It was crowded with people. And I had not one thought. Wonder if this one's going to make it. I did have one thought. Lord, am I ready? And I woke up. And my knees hit the floor. So thankful to be on this side of eternity. You know, you would think that just like that man that was forgiven much, you'd never forget it. It would stick with a person for the rest of their life and they'd never have trouble. I wish I could tell you that the rest of my life up to now, I've never had trouble with that again. But you know what? The Lord had to remind me of that as I was praying for this meeting. Because there are distractions for us. It's the devil's goal, if he cannot get me to have a desire to go back out in sin and walk away from it all, he won't give up. He's got another plan. And one of his plans is to get me through distraction. That I would spend my time looking at what somebody else is doing. That song said, "Where shall I go?" As if I'm the only one that will be there. And as far as I'm concerned, that's the way it will be. Because I will not be concerned about anybody else at that time. There's a song that we sing. It says, "My soul be on thy guard, 10,000 foes arise." That song is written as if I'm the only one it's dealing with. My soul. My soul is continually in my hands. "My soul be on thy guard, 10,000 foes arise, and hosts of sin are pressing hard to draw thee from the skies. Oh, watch and fight and pray. The battle never give o'er. Renew it boldly every day, and help divine implore." This year is political season. I want to tell you, it can be a distraction. It can consume our mind of everything that's going on and what the future holds. All I need to know is that God holds the future. No matter what happens out in the future, just like in these testimonies that we have heard here tonight, he's well able to take care of his own. My grandpa, when I was a young boy, lived up in Mississippi, and he still plowed with a mule. And as he would be out there plowing next to the road, I noticed something about the mule, and I thought, poor old fella. He had these things on the side of his head, blinders, that the old mule would be wearing, to where the only place I can see is what's straight ahead of me. I won't be distracted by what happens over here in the bushes or the car that drives by on the road. Grandpa put it on the mule because that mule had trouble with distractions. Today it's going to be very good for each one of us to ask the Lord, as it would have been good for Peter to have done. If Peter would have just turned and followed the Lord and said, okay, Lord, I'll follow you. Tell me what I need to do. And never been concerned about someone else. For me, I want to hear when I stand before the Lord, well done, thou good and faithful servant. If I'm not careful, there's another verse that I could hear. Galatians 5 and 7 says to me, you did run well. Who did hinder? Who was it that could have stopped me anyhow? Dan, you started out well. You could have made it, but you got distracted. I want to talk to you a little bit about another word. Diversionary tactics. Divert attention from the thing that I need to be focusing on. When I was back in school, there was a story that we read. It said there was a war. It's called the Trojan War. It said the Greeks were trying to take the city of Troy. They laid a 10-year siege to try to overtake that city and were unsuccessful. 10 years of trying whatever they could do and could not do it. So apparently they were close to the shore of the ocean or the sea or whatever. The Greeks had not been able to enter. So out on the shore, they built a huge wooden horse. And then as the people of Troy watched, the army got in their boats and sailed away. The city of Troy, it says they were watching. What is this? There is a verse in Ecclesiastes 9 said there was a little city. There was a few men within it. A great king came and besieged it. And he built great bulwarks against it. This is in Ecclesiastes 9 and 14 and 15. Looks like there's no hope. Looks like they're going to overtake this city. Then there's one more little verse hooked behind that one. It said there was found in that city a poor wise man who by his wisdom delivered the city. Well, I think about this as I read the story, and I think about it now with what we're talking about tonight. The city of Troy now sees the army that has been after them for so long has sailed away, and they start thinking thoughts. And their thought was, let's go get it and pull it in the city. It was even on wheels for them to pull. Let's pull it into the city. It's going to be our victory trophy. If there had only been a poor wise man that could have told them, wait a minute, they've been after us for 10 years to get us. Let's don't take a chance now. If you're going to go out there at all, light that thing on fire. But instead, they didn't receive that. Instead, it says in the story that what they did was went over there and hooked to it and pulled it into the city. It's time for celebrating now. We held them off for 10 years, and now they're gone, and they left us with a trophy. It goes on to say what they didn't know was that inside it was hollow, and there was the best of the Greek army, a few men, like we call the Marines today, a few men that were willing to say, this could be our only chance of taking the city. And it said they were inside that horse. Probably hoping, I hope like everything, they don't burn it. I hope they do what we think they will do. and they have been pulled now inside the city. And it said that night, they opened the hatch, and they went to the gates because everybody is secure now. The enemy is gone, and we've even got the trophy from it. They went to the gates and opened the gates because all that fleet of army had only sailed off in the distance until it was dark. And they had turned around and come back to the shore and were waiting just outside. It said the Greeks entered, destroyed the city, ending the war. A diversionary tactic. A plan to get me distracted. Get me to thinking about something else. You remember the city of Ai? When they went and looked at the city of Ai and they said, we only need a few men to take this city. You know what? A few men would have done it if the Lord had been along, but the Lord wasn't there. And you remember it said they fled before the men of Ai. Some of the men died from it. Maybe 36 men died as they were fleeing. Remember, Joshua fell on his face crying, we've just started this campaign through this country. And if we have lost to this small city, what are we going to do? You remember the Lord dealing with him? Get up off your face. There's a problem. There's sin in the camp is the reason for this problem. And Joshua took care of the problem. And now the Lord said, okay, go. And you can take the city of Ai. I hardly ever read the story past that. I just remember that they took the city. They used a diversionary tactic. Joshua said, okay, I want a big group of you to travel all the way around the backside of the city and stay hidden. And then Joshua does what had happened before. He said, the rest of us are going to go in front of the city there, and we've got a plan. And it said that when the men of the city of Ai saw it, they came out and started chasing them just like they had before. Now Joshua has gotten from God, I'm going to give you this city. But Joshua is doing it a certain way. Joshua starts fleeing just exactly like the group had done before. And it said in there, this is the 8th chapter, and the 14th through the 16th verse, when they saw that group fleeing, it said they unloaded the city. So there was not one man of Ai left in the city. Everybody is going to go ruin the children of Israel this time. Said Joshua ran so far, and then he gave the signal. When all of the men are out of the city, out of the protection, he gave the command to those on the other side, the signal to them, go on in now. There was nobody to protect the city now. And it said they went in and immediately set fire to Ai. Now here is the men of Ai. Everybody that was in a protected city is now in an open plain chasing Joshua until they turn around and see their city going up in flames. It said the king wist not that an ambush had been planned. He came after them just like he had done before. It was a tactic to draw their attention away. The devil has tactics for us today. His desire is to divert my attention to something else. This is what's important. Another example in our American history. There was a story of a general. He left us with this little saying to remember him by. Custer's last stand. And there's different reports about him, but one of them that I read was that he was a young general. He was eager to make a name for himself. And he had been sent, Indians had been put on reservations, but they're not staying. A lot of them have left, and we need some of you to go put them back in their place again. So he goes to a place and he sees, he's got maybe 600 men with him, and he sees a band of Indians out ahead on the rise of a hill. And he knows he can do it. I wonder what he was thinking. Maybe he was thinking, you know what, this won't take long, and I will have made a name for myself. We still remember him today. because it didn't take long. It was a diversionary tactic. It was a plan to draw him over the hill, and on the other side were many, many more Indians that killed him. Diversionary tactic. The devil has a plan for our lives. My brother-in-law, Doug Wall, went to Africa a few months ago, and he was telling me while I was walking the streets of Nairobi, the streets are so crowded you can hardly even walk. Everybody is bumping up against you. And he's pulling his suitcase along behind him when somebody stepped on his foot. Well, you know, that's no big deal when there's a whole bunch of people there, except that this guy didn't get off his foot. He said, sorry, but he kept standing on his foot. And then he said it again. He said it three times. And Doug's, you know, okay, well, get off my foot and we'll keep on going. Then he did get off his foot, and Doug went on to the place that he was going. And when he got there, he realized in that amount of time, there was a plan going on to distract him. In that amount of time, someone behind him had reached in and took his cell phone and took his modem that would have given him access from Africa to here. I was thinking about this. The devil has a plan for you and I. And he will not come to us and tell you, all right, I just want to let you know. He didn't go to Job and say, Job, I want to let you know I'm fixing to try you over the next period of time. Job never knew what was happening except a trouble was coming his way. In Oklahoma, we have a bird. It's called killdeer. It nests on the ground. And so it's a prey to a lot of things. A dog, a cat, just a lot of things can be a prey when it has young on the nest. So it has a tactic. Should, even when I'm walking down the driveway and it's got a nest pretty close to the driveway, when I get close, that mother bird will leave the nest and start running. Not just running, but it drags a wing on the ground. Looks just like it's got a broke wing. It's a diversionary tactic. It is, if you should be intending to come to the nest, I want to draw you away, and I'm an easy prey because I got a broke wing. Somehow God gave that animal that ability. And should the animal keep getting closer to the nest, that bird is willing to turn around and come back and get closer, dragging that wing to draw it away. I've got a desire to make heaven. The devil has a plan to divert my attention. He does not try it with sin. He does not come to me and say, Dan, give this thing up and go the ways of the world. Now I've got a desire to go to heaven. So he does what that bird does. Dan, I know your desire is here. I want to draw you away by something that, just like when Jesus called after Peter and said, Peter, follow me. And Peter got his attention focused on somebody else. Distraction. Christian, in Pilgrim's Progress, had opportunities to be distracted. As he left his city, the city of destruction, and his family and friends are calling out to him to come back, he would not let that distraction get him. Said he put his fingers in his ears and he ran, crying, life, life, eternal life. If we expect to make it, we're going to have to do that. Did he have a perfect journey? No. In fact, it wasn't very long till he fell in the Slough of Despond. But there's something I like about him. When he crawled out, he was on the Celestial City side of the Slough of Despond. He wasn't saying, if this is the way it is, I'm turning back now. His desire was to make it. But there was a plan laid for him. You remember, he had not even made it to the wicket gate when somebody met him. Said, it appears to me that you've got a load that you're carrying. Where did you get this load anyhow? He said, well, this man named Evangelist came and told me about my condition, and I started having this load ever since. That man told him, said, I thought it. I know it. He's done that to a lot of people. He has loaded them down with burdens. And I want to tell you, you don't have to go the route that he has told you to go. In fact, if you want to rid yourself of the burden real soon, there's a town right here real close. It's called the town of morality. You see, Christian wants to make it to heaven. If he had wanted to turn back, he would have turned back to the city of destruction. So there was a plan laid for him. You want to live right? You want to feel right about living right? Turn off right here. The town of morality. The rich young ruler came to Jesus. He wasn't satisfied. There was something still longing. Is there something else that I need to do that I would be able to obtain eternal life? You remember he told him, here's the commandments, the Ten Commandments. And he said, I've kept them from my youth up. Is there anything I lack yet? Jesus has come now. It's more than just the law. Jesus now can search the heart. And he searched his heart. He said, if you want it, go sell everything that you have, give it to the poor, and come and follow me. And we never read where he did it. I wonder, was he willing to spend the rest of his life in the town of morality? I'm doing the right things. I expect to make heaven my home. There's a danger for me. You know what? I need to realize the value of the blood of Christ. It's going to be my certificate to enter heaven. You remember when Moses was told in Exodus 12, take a lamb and slay it on this certain day. Take the blood and put it on the doorpost. Because at midnight, I'm passing by. What was he going to be looking for? He was going to be looking for the blood there. Folks, he's going to be looking for the blood to be applied to my life. The blood applied to my life then causes the good works to come. It is never intended for me to do the good works alone and expect to make heaven my home. The blood must be applied. It says, for by grace are ye saved through faith, and that not of yourselves. There is not a thing that any one of us can do on our own to make heaven our home. Not of works, lest any should boast. But the very next verse, in the 10th verse of that Ephesians 2, it says he intended there to be some good works that would follow. Folks, I want to tell you, let's keep it right. Let's make sure that the blood of Christ is always there. I need his blood every day to be applied to my heart. To be able to fine-tune me that I would be able to make heaven my home. Because I want to tell you what we have out ahead of us. Let's take a look in Revelations. The 20th chapter and the 12th verse. I want to make heaven my home. This is what I will see. 12th verse, 20 and 12, says, I saw the dead, small and great, stand before God, and the books were open. And another book was open, which was the book of life, and the dead were judged out of those things which were written according to the books, according to their works. And look at that 11th verse. I saw a great white throne. You know, we've seen some impressive things. They talk about the seven wonders of the world. You look at this one. I saw a great white throne and him that sat on it, from whose face the earth and the heaven fled away. Today there are many people that say there is no God. I was watching in the news reading it the other day, and they said the Hubble telescope has been able to reach out now to see a galaxy that is almost, it's like billions of light years away, 13 billion light years away. It's almost like, if I can stagger your mind by big numbers, you will believe it. And you think about a light year. I looked at that. Light travels at 186,000 miles a second. They're talking about how far it traveled in a year. And then they're talking about how far it traveled in a billion years. And they're saying 13 billion years. And people are believing it. And they say we are now just a few million years away from the Big Bang. And I wonder, you know, there's a Big Bang coming. Folks, we're closer than a few million years to it. We've got unbelief all around us. I've got to believe this. Every knee is going to bow one day. Those that say there is no God, their knee will bow one day. I must believe it. My knee will bow one day. And dead, small and great, it does not matter. We'll be there. Just as I saw in my dream, all the people around me. And when this happens, now I realize I'll not be thinking about anybody else. It will only be, Lord, it's my time. And it's not going to take him long to judge me. He's not going to say, explain yourself why you did this or why you thought this. It's going to be immediate that he'd be able to do it. That song continues on to say, never think the victory won, nor once at ease sit down. Thine arduous work will not be done till thou hast got the crown. Then it says, fight on, my soul, till death shall bring thee to thy God. He'll take thee at thy parting breath up to his blessed abode. Did Paul have distractions come to him? He had many things that could have turned him aside. But what was his testimony about it? None of these things move me. Neither count I my life dear to myself. Another place, he now says, I fought a good fight. I've kept the faith. I finished the course. It's over for me now. But he said, henceforth there is laid up for me a crown, and it's not for me only, but it's for everybody that loves his appearing. As I look at this meeting starting, and I look at my desire is I want to make heaven my home. The devil has not come to me saying, Dan, give it up. Go out in the world, they've got a lot of good things for you. You know, Moses turned his back on it a long time ago. He would rather suffer the afflictions of the righteous than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. Each of us are reminded today, pleasures of sin are going to be just for a season. Eternity is going to last forever. And I've got my mind made up. I will not turn it loose. I've got to make heaven my home. So the devil wants to come to me with a distraction, with a tactic. I know how I can do it. I'm going to get his mind diverted onto something else. There's a verse that says, thou will keep him in perfect peace. What's the other end of it? It's got a hinge hooked to it. Thou will keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on thee. He promises perfect peace with nothing else. If I find that my peace is gone, whether it's about world conditions or whether it's about what my brother's doing, he's got perfect peace for me. I just got to go back to the equation and say, I've lost it. Oh, I see why. I don't have my mind stayed on him. My mind has been distracted to other things. I desire your prayers. Folks, as we go from here, let's remember Hezekiah's call. Set your house in order. We're each one going to die and not live. It's coming to us all. Lord, help us. Amen.